Hail, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on DLive.tv/Dave Martell. Make sure you give us a follow or like, subscribe, share over on YouTube, all that good stuff. Follow me on Twitter at Big Dave Martell. Welcome back, Tristan. How's your tooth feeling? How's your head? Is it still all swollen? You doing good?
No, I'm doing perfectly good now. It went up and healed, and you know, it's all good now.
Wonderful. Awesome. So me and Tristan once in a while like to break out with a Q&A episode. We like to do this kind of stuff because people got a lot of questions and stuff for us, and we do a lot of, you know, we do a lot of our shows are based off of things that people suggest because I like to engage the boys. I mean, I like to engage all the bog lords out there, all the brothers and sisters of the folk community, and I see a bunch of folks in the chat. Hail to all you guys. So let's get into the Q&A stuff. We're going to answer as many questions as we can. We're going to do a rapid fire intro because we have a lot of questions that I want to get through. Hail Bartleby, hail Luke, hail Srujan, hail Chris, hail everybody. Many hails. So anyway, and oh yeah, I'm sorry about not uploading the last episode of with Keith. It's something screwed up with the file. I'm trying to fix it. I'll get it up as soon as possible. So let's get right into the Q&A. Mr. Tristan, you wanna take us away with the first question?
Sure. We'll go with the question from Kyle Davis first.
Wonderful.
Does alchemy have anything to do with Germanic culture? And the answer is no, not really. Alchemy is a practice that was, I mean, it's basically hermetic. It comes from the Greek-Egyptian era during the early first century AD of, you know, back when Greece had already conquered Egypt. They ran through and they were becoming a Roman province. Mm-hmm. You know, they had the city of Alexandria and everywhere, and all these different beliefs in, of the area were syncretizing in these, you know, big globalist multinational cities there. And the original Greek religion had sort of dropped off, and they got picked up with Neoplatonism, and it started forming a bunch of different new esoteric traditions because mm-hmm. people wanted, you know, rituals and everything like that. And that's where we get Hermeticism from. And one of the offshoots of this was alchemy. And alchemy was based on the notion of the four classical elements and also basic Hermetic principles and also probably some actual legitimate things they took from Egyptian religion, you know, like rituals and functions that the Egyptian priesthood was using.
And Greek
stuff. The most part, yeah, and Greek stuff. I mean, it's hard to say exactly which elements from, you know, Hermetic principles and whatnot are actual, you know, ritual Greek religious elements, which are just like New Age. I mean, you know, it's weird to say New Age because it happened like 2,000 years ago, but at the time it would have been New Age, right? Yeah. It was basically like Wiccanism at the time.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, yeah, to say, you know, to answer the question real simply, no, it doesn't have anything to do with Germanic culture.
So that doesn't mean that all Hermeticism is bad, though. You know, a lot of people associate Hermeticism with like Aleister Crowley, and you know, and I'm sure Aleister Crowley borrowed some stuff from Hermeticism, but they're not the same stuff. They're not the same. Some Hermeticism stuff is pretty interesting. Is pretty cool. Like, am I going to say that it is Germanic in origin? I mean, some of it probably is borrowed, but as a whole, Hermeticism. Although some, like I said, some of the stuff is cool. Not all. Some of it's, me and Chris Tristan were actually just talking about this. Some of it's really stupid. Some of it's like, you know, summon this Sumerian god and he's going to help you, you know, with peanut butter jelly sandwich creation. Or like just, it's just like the really goofiest stuff. But some of it is cool. And as far as alchemy, when you get into alchemy through in the Middle Ages, especially in the late Middle Ages, going into you know, Renaissance and Victorian era, some of what they called alchemy there is absolutely borrowed from Germanic tradition. And I'll explain. A lot of these folks, when getting into alchemy, not necessarily about the mixture of the elements, but, and this is kind of associated with elements, but one of the elements and one of the things that they talked about was what they called ether or the ethereal. And I've covered this exhaustively in several streams, but I'll do a quick overview. The idea of ether, and this went into all the way into like the 18 and 1900s. And in fact, Nikola Tesla talked about the ether. He was like, you know, big into it and stuff. And I mean, he wove into his ideas of electric universe and stuff into that. But either way, the idea of ether was still in his mind. And I'll tell you where ether comes from. The idea of ether comes. In fact, the word ether, if you look at old-timey books, it'll be spelled A-E-T-H-E-R, ether, aether. Aether comes from the word Aethem, which comes from the word Etman, which is the Proto-Indo-European root word that went east and became Atman and Prana, went south, became Anima and Pneuma in Rome and Greece, and then for us became Aethem or Aether, or as people in the Norse, purely Norse tradition understand is Und, the gift from Odin. So, no, as a whole, alchemy is not of Germanic origin. It is not parallel. However, some understandings and practices that were written about in the school of alchemy in the late Middle Ages were of Germanic descent.
Right. I think that's a good way to say it. It's primarily a medieval syncretic tradition that has a bunch of different stuff from all different kinds of cultures and religions mixed together.
So, next question. Let's go with, here's a really good one. I forgot to tell you about this one. Tristan, how do you believe about extreme human antiquity? We're talking like Atlantis kind of stuff. We're talking about the Purana might be literally true, Hyperborea, all that kind of stuff. How do you feel about that?
Right. I do take the position quite strongly that I disagree with all these things. I believe in the normal accepted scientific basis of humanity that, you know, more or less in the normal timeline, you know, a couple hundred thousand years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I do believe that I do favor the position that instead of out of Africa, I favor the multi-regional hypothesis, which is the idea that human ancestors spread out to all the different continents and then simultaneously evolved into Homo sapien, and that accounts for a bunch of racial differences. But yeah, I do have to vehemently disagree with notions of like human beings millions of years ago, especially in the Indian traditions. Me and Kerwin have quite vociferously disagreed with some Indian literalists who say, like, you know, the Mahabharata took place like 2.5 million years ago. Like, it's not literal.
So, I am way more woke than Tristan, and I literally believe in the antediluvian world, and I believe in the extreme human antiquity. And if you read the book Forbidden Archaeology, which was actually written by a guy that's a Hare Krishna, he lays out countless cases of people, like, you know, human remains being dated back far older than we could even explain. And you know, obviously most scientists and archaeologists just like throw it out. They say, well, that doesn't go along with our theory, so there's no way that can be true. But it's, you know, stares in their face. There's for example, there's like examples of human beings that are like 800,000 years old and stuff like that. It's pretty crazy. So, yeah, I believe that we was Hyperboreans. So, you know, is it true? Is it 100% real? I can't really 100% prove it, you know, sitting here. I'm just a podcaster. But I do believe it. I believe it. I'm not going to lie.
So I guess that makes me the age cup.
Yeah. All right. So, extreme human antiquity. I do highly, even people that are skeptical, that are like Tristan and kind of accept the kind of laid out scientific understanding of how history has happened. At least give it a shot. At least give it a shot. It's a book called Forbidden Archaeology. This isn't just some hoopla goofy stuff. This is a guy that's a real archaeologist that wrote this. And even his critics, a lot of his critics that said he was a nutcase after reading the book said that this needs to be examined. We need to take a look at this.
You know what? Actually, now that you mention it, I think I actually have it in my room somewhere. My father was rather interested in it. I never actually got around to reading it, but maybe I should.
It's a really, it changed my mind. You know what I mean? Well, it didn't change my mind. I already believed it. But it, like, you know, it gave credence. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, I was right. Cool. So, next question, Drizzy, what do you got up?
Oh, let's go with one of the first ones here. What is your favorite wine?
Oh, yeah, I believe the question was, what is your favorite wine and why is it White Zinfandel? All right. Well,
yeah, that was it.
As you can see from what I'm drinking, I do not drink White Zinfandel. I do not drink white wines. When it comes to wines, I like the in-between red wines. I like a Merlot. I like a Cabernet. Those are my favorite wines. I don't get into the really sweet stuff. There's a if you have an Italian family at all, you know, we're gonna get into some WAP posting here. It's very possible that you have tried Riuniti Lambrusco, which is some of the sweetest, sugariest, cheapest wine you can buy. It comes in a big jug. It's like that, you know, I'm sure, you know, if there are any Paisans in the chat, you guys are going to know. I'll drink it. I'm not, if somebody pulls it out and it's cold, I'll drink it. It's not bad. But I am a Merlot or a Cabernet individual.
Unfortunately, none of my ancestors hail from Southern Europe, so I'm the opposite of a wine snob. Basically, give me, like, the cheapest wine. I just want the alcohol if I'm drinking it. Like, I generally don't drink beer. I prefer, like, apple cider. But or liquor. If I want to drink, I'm actually going to drink liquor. Like, I'm just that kind of guy, right? But I do quite like wine as taste, but give me, like, the cheapest wine. Give me, like, $2 chuck, and I'm good.
That's nuts. I am a beer guy too. I love, you know, growing up in Pennsylvania, I'm a huge fan of microbrews, man. We, you know, Pennsylvania Yingling Lager, you know, Sons of Yingling Lager, they are the oldest microbrewery in America. So you can put that in your oldest brewery in America, period. So you can put that in your pipe and smoke it. Pennsylvania is the home of beer in America, and we are the home of microbrews. So I'm a huge fan of microbrews. I like IPAs. I like Double Box. I'm a big fan of sours. I just love good beer. Unless it's some cheap, like if we're at a party or something, if I come over to your house and you have, like, you know, Coors Light or you know, like a sparkling water or something, I'll go for the sparkling water. I would just rather not drink beer,
right,
than drink
Coors. If I do have to drink beer, I'm going to drink, like, the dark brown porters or something like that. Like, I like Guinness. I like anything that's dark, that kind of thing. I'm not going to touch any of the piss American beers like Budweiser or any of that shit. Like, do not want, will not drink it.
Yeah, Chris says he gets a lot of shit for liking IPAs, man. Well, those people that give you shit are nuts, man. IPAs are great. IPAs are great. But and on top of everything, the brewer, the guy that makes the mead in my kindred, is one of the best mead brewers I've ever seen in my whole life. The mead that he makes is out of control. I'm not much of a drinker. Like, what you guys see, like, when I have a glass of wine or a couple glasses of wine or a beer here on the bog, that's, like, what I drink. That's, like, the only time I really drink, except, like, once in a while, maybe once a month, I'll have something if somebody comes over. If he makes he does, like, these sizers, which are meads brewed with apples. It's like a cider mixed with a mead. And he'll bring over a jug. I will finish the jug, and I don't drink. That's how good it is. He's a great, so
yeah,
shout
see,
out to him.
That's why I like liquor personally, because if I'm drinking, it's because I intend to get shit-faced, and it's probably because I haven't drunk anything in, like, 3 months.
Yeah.
So.
General rule, if you guys ever hang out with Dave, Dave is never, ever allowed to have any liquor ever. Zero. The police will come. We will all go to jail. It's bad.
It's all right, Dave. We just have to box out in the front.
Yeah. Just no liquor ever. I can't do it. It's just, I get drunk too fast, and the inner, you know, the inner barbarian starts coming out, and I just start wiling out, and it's just no good. So no liquor ever, and especially no brown liquor. Whiskey, tequila, dark rum, anything like that. I'll give you guys a quick story. One time, me and my buddies were drinking whiskey, and we got so drunk, we got into a fight that my one friend tried to choke out my other friend. He pulled out a knife and tried to stab him in the face, missed, stabbed my other friend in the face. He picked up a bottle, smashed it, tried to chase him down and stab him with it. I chased him up the stairs, tackled him. He tried to stab me with it. I wrestled it away from him, tried to stab him with it, and it broke, and we fell down the steps, rolling down the steps in glass shards, and got all cut up. That's what happens when Dave drinks whiskey. I mean, obviously, I was, like, in my 20s then, but still.
Well, that sounds like a great time, Dave.
That was somebody could have died. Like, that was stupid. Don't do that. Don't brown whiskey.
You know, it's considered a dull affair if there's not at least 3 deaths.
Yeah. we almost got there that night. That was terrible. Really terrible. So anyway, next question.
Next question we have from Tyler Golden. He says, thoughts on Ygritte Thorson's Nine Gates of Midgard. I own it, but currently three books deep in my stack of things to read.
Do you want to take that, Tristan, or you want me to take that?
I mean, I know we're both going to get basically the same answer here, yeah. So why don't you go?
I would not allow that book into my house. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I personally have to agree here. Ygritte Thorson, also known as Stephen Flowers, which is his actual name, is a reprehensible Satanist and not a member of the faith, and you should not read basically anything he ever has ever written. I give a small bit of a, like a loophole to his Food Park book, because, you know, there's only so much, like, you can't really fuck up the runes. The runes are just the runes, right? They are what they are. But anything that has anything to do with his opinion, has anything to do with interpretations of lore, is bullshit Satanist entryism, and you should discard it and throw it in a fire where it actually belongs.
My man, the balls on this guy. Yeah, that's a controversial statement, but I don't even care. I completely reject everything he's ever written. He's, you know, it's if you go, okay, so the thing about this guy is they say, oh well, he was involved with Temple of Set, you know, so over many years. And let me let you guys in on something. That the Temple of Set was started by a guy named Michael Aquino. Michael Aquino is a military intelligence officer that wrote a book called PSYOP Mind War. It's about literally about brainwashing people. Like, you know, we're talking Behold a Pale Horse tier, like brainwash creepy stuff. And MK Ultra and that kind of stuff. He was involved in what was called the Presidio Daycare Scandal, where over 60 children pointed him out as a guy that ritually abused them. Over 60. You know, and these children, this is one just some made up stuff. This was something that these kids were examined, and they had damage to their genitals. They had. I'm not going to get into any of the graphic
some
stuff.
Some horrific things. I mean, it's about as bad as you can possibly imagine.
Children had chlamydia. Children. We're talking.
And
some
gonorrhea.
Under 5 years. Yeah, and gonorrhea. Under 5 years old. Under his care. That pointed him out as their abuser. They went to this guy, Michael Aquino's house, and they found tens of thousands of images of children being abused, and they found like a satanic ritual room. This is Michael Aquino started the Temple of Set. From the Temple of Set came Maria Abramovich. I'm sure you guys are familiar with that name, the Pizzagate lady, the spirit cooking lady. This is the crowd that Stephen Flowers comes from. And if Stephen Flowers says that he's not involved with that anymore, well, he just released he contributed to a book where Michael Aquino also contributed. They're friends. Aquino is his mentor, and they're not separate. And in fact, they still work together.
I don't know about everyone else, but I don't really accept the idea of, no, guys, I was only a pedophile like 40 years ago. I'm okay.
Yeah. Now, granted, there's no record of Thorson abusing any kids, but he's you know, you're not adjacent to that kind of person.
Dude, you don't hang out with pedophiles if you're just not one.
Yeah.
Like, so, normal people don't tolerate this shit.
Yeah. How do you spell that last name? Aquino. Aquino. And Michael Aquino now is a high-ranking member of the NSA currently. That's scary. That's scary stuff. And that's where Stephen Flowers comes from. So if you are like, if you hear all that and you know all that truth, and you still advocate for Stephen Flowers, I don't know if, you know, I got nothing to say to you, because I'm a dad. Anything that happens that hurts kids, man, I'm like getting pissed off now just thinking about it. Like, it's nasty stuff. So. That's why, you know, Nine Gates of Midgard, and plus Nine Gates of Midgard is literally just satanic initiation process put in with Germanic language.
It's a perfect example of the stuff you should stay away from, where it's just interpreted lore and satanic entryism.
Yeah, it's literally satanic entryism. That's all that it is. It's something that our ancestors would have thrown you in the bog for. Yeah. So, okay, next question before we make the whole show about this.
Right. Next question is from our good friend Mitty. He says he wants to know about the historicity of a patron deity, and mm-hmm. also wants to know what deity are we personally most close with
sure.
due to, you know, like our lifestyle and caste and whatnot.
Absolutely. Tristan, you want to take that?
Sure, absolutely. The patron deity concept is actually found in the sagas. It was a historical process. You see it scattered around everywhere. The one I can most closely come to offhand is the instance of Hrafnkell Flairsgothi, in which he obviously was stated to have Flair as his patron deity. He was the one he most worshipped in a temple specifically to him. But it does pop up quite a bit on the sagas here and there, elsewhere, just little mentions and casual statements there. It's a thing, but what was not a thing was the idea of worshipping one deity exclusively in a monotheistic format. This is not a Germanic practice. When they have a patron deity, it's just someone that they felt especially close with and maybe directed most of their worship towards, but they didn't restructure their metaphysics or cosmology around this deity.
Yeah, and I also like to point out the Lombards. There was that the Lombardi Codex or something, I can't remember. It was the story of the Lombards, and they hailed the All-Mother Frigg most of all. In fact, the story goes is that Frigg gave the Lombards their name, the Longobards, the Longbeards. She gave them their name. That's how the story goes. And I also like to point out that they called Odin Godin or Golden, G-O-D-A-N. And a lot of people think that that's why the Catholic Church started using the word God instead of the word Dio, because the Lombards.
Yeah, it was because the Lombards were the first Germanic tribe to see actual missionaries from the Christian faith.
Yeah.
And so they structured the notion of their highest power around God because Odin was named Gothen.
Yeah. So, that's the Lombards. As far as me personally, I'm with the Lombards, man. Being a Lombard myself, I pray to the All Mother, man. That's my girl. I've told the stories many times on streams. She's gifted me with two beautiful children, a happy, healthy family. She brought me out of darkness, man. She's my girl. I pray to other deities as well, obviously. She's the mother of my kindred. I attribute my home state to be kind of her, region, because many of the Germanic peoples, the Teutonic peoples, believe very deeply in Frau Holla, which William Reeves would say is the same as the All Mother, and I also agree, the Earth Mother or whatever, and I believe that she's the mother of Pennsylvania. My family's been in Pennsylvania colony since the 1600s. I have Southern European DNA, like the Lombards. I got a lot of association, a lot of connections, and I attribute that why she's had so much impact on my life and stuff like that. So, Heil Herr Frigg.
I personally don't particularly recognize the practice of a patron deity for myself. But if pressed on the matter, I do have to say that I do venerate Freyr probably more than anyone else for matters of my own personal heritage. I'll put it at that. Mm-hmm. I also see a special connection with Odin, of course, just due to the nature of my own interests of academic wise, and I've always been really good with combat, and I mean he is a god of war, so I mean it's just a the seeking of knowledge, all these things are interesting to me. So I personally find a lot of a good reason to worship him more than some of the other gods. I would say I don't particularly recognize the patron deity. Well, I don't say I have a ritual function in which I worship one more than the others intentionally.
So let's do the next question. This is kind of off the path a little bit, back to kind of like personal stuff, but has music or art inspired your spiritual beliefs? And also I'm going to connect that with what's our favorite metal band?
Oh, that's a good one. So I guess I'll start with this one. I don't think that music or art has really inspired my religious beliefs in the sense that, as I mentioned before, like I was raised in my faith. So before I could ever actually be, in the religious sense, I had always known the lore and the gods for what they are, rather than being part of the music scene. I didn't even get into music really until I was like 14 or 15. My favorite metal band, I probably historically would have to go with Manowar as my first introduction to heavy metal in general. But I also do quite like the band Rebellion.
Very cool. So for me, being somebody that was raised kind of half-assed Roman Catholic, art and music were a huge inspiration for me. Because if it wasn't for art and music and, you know, stories and stuff like Lord of the Rings and Conan the Barbarian and like all that, I wouldn't even have known that there were was polytheism. I would have never been introduced to the idea of other gods. So, you know, growing up, and this kind of goes into the we're talking about our patron deity and stuff. I never felt, you know, to the Christians out there, you know, I mean, no disrespect to them. But me personally, I never felt any sort of resonance in when I was in church. When I tried, man, I used to get mad because, you know, like, why doesn't God talk to me? Why doesn't God communicate with me? Where is God? And I never felt anything. And I used to pray to God, pray to Jesus, you know, try to do the whole thing. Nothing. But there was something a little special about the Blessed Mother. You know what I mean? Something that kind of like didn't completely click, but I always felt, because my grandfather, who was a guy that came from Italy, he loved the Blessed Mother. That was his girl. You know what I mean? And if you grew up in like around my grandfather, you would have thought he was a polytheist with how much he prayed to the Blessed Mother. You know what I mean? It's pretty weird kind of stuff. And, you know, Jews and Muslims actually say that about Roman Catholicism, that it's, you know, still paganism, that it's not actually, you know, monotheistic. But that's a whole nother discussion. But when I was young and I started reading about the myths, the obviously the Germanic gods and the Greek gods, and you know, this, it just was powerful to me. And then, you know, my grandfather also read me The Hobbit when I was a little kid, and just the aesthetic of, you know, fantasy. Just the aesthetic of Germanic lore and stuff. It just was like profound for me. I loved it.
Oh, absolutely. The Lord of the Rings was basically holy writ in my family. My father is the biggest Tolkien fan you can imagine.
That's awesome. Well, Tolkien was brilliant. He's one of the greatest writers ever. And anybody argues with that, you're wrong. it's just true.
I'm not even going to argue with you. You're just wrong.
You're just wrong, bub. But yeah, so that had a huge impact on me, and when I finally kind of, you know, came out of my shell and decided, you know, it's time to step in, you know, it absolutely had an impact on me. You know what I mean? I'm not like Tristan has a wonderful gift that he's second generation into the faith. Most of us didn't have that luxury. I don't want to say it's a luxury, because it's a gift. And my children will have that gift, and many of you, your children will have that gift. But for those of us that are first generation into the faith, we needed something to spark it. We needed something to look at it, and there's no shame. What am I, a guy that I know who is one of the most sincere, devout, genuine practitioners of Germanic polytheism you'll ever meet in your whole life, the first time he ever heard of worship of other gods was from Dungeons and Dragons. He read like, what was the book called? Deities and Demigods or something by Gary Gygax. And that just like blew his mind that there were other gods. And that just started it. So it sounds kind of cheesy and corny. Maybe it is. But it brought him to the faith. So is it?
You know what? I people always ask all the time, like, you know, what do you think about the pop culture Norse stuff? You know, like Thor movies and whatnot. And I've always taken the position that I think they do more good than they do harm. Like, so many people have come because they realized, oh shit, this is actually pretty awesome. That guy's cool, right?
Yeah.
And then they, you know, they get into it and then they get religious. But whatever gets in people into it, I'm down with that.
Yeah.
So long as you're not like pretending, you know, Marvel shit is actually real.
Yeah, it was. I remember when, like, you know, I used to play in a lot of metal bands and stuff like that. And I remember when Guitar Hero came out, and all the metalheads were like, "That's fucking." And I'm like, dude, like, because of Guitar Hero, literally everybody knows who Slayer is now. Like, literally, I could go to a frat party and hear Raining Blood. You know what I mean? It's like, that's cool. You know what I mean? The fact that they acknowledge Slayer now is cool. So it's like, is Marvel Thor kind of a heresy? Yeah, of course. But if you look at it in the sense of bringing it to the forefront of the population's consciousness, less, you know, that's completely cool. In fact, my wife, and
that is exactly how I choose to view it.
You know, that's why I don't. You know, I mean, do I agree with the Hollywoodization of of Luke says Guitar Hero saved metal. Maybe that's true. Maybe that brought in a whole new generation of guitar players. So, you know, that's I mean, it's cool. I have nothing to get. Is it corny? Yeah, sure. But if it has good results, then it's good. You know, and that's my wife actually went to the doctor's recently, and I'm going to say this live. I don't know if I have that any yet, but my wife is currently pregnant with our third child, and she was Luke says saved metal from kosher grunge, but grunge sucks. I hate grunge completely. But anyway, my wife was at the doctor, you know, getting like ultrasound, blood work, and all that stuff, and the nurse was telling her. Like an older lady, like a lady that's in her 50s or whatever, like an older lady was telling her she saw my wife's, Mjolnir necklace. And she's like, oh, I know what that is, blah, blah, blah. And she talked about how she her cat's named Odin, and she watched Lord of the Rings, and how she's making her, not Lord of the Rings, how she watched the show Vikings, and how it's making her question her religion and her faith and all that stuff. And now she wants to quit being a nurse and go live a traditional lifestyle somewhere and like all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's corny. And my wife's like,
dude, whatever works. I'm down for anything so long as it has results.
Yeah. And she's like, I was like, is this lady like a crazy? She's like, no, she was like, had like the bob, like the Karen bob with the plastic frame glasses. Like,
I take it back. No, it's totally blasphemy. Like, this is not allowed.
But she's just some like normal lady and just like getting in touch with the aesthetic and the symbolism of ancient Germanic culture, like blew her mind and like turned her world upside down. And now she hates what she does. Yeah. So, y'all, who knows? Who knows? She wasn't a Karen. She said, like, that's just the example of what kind of haircut. I hate Karens, too, so don't get me started on the Karens. All right, let's go to the next question. What's the next question?
Right. The next question is from our friend Shruyan, who says, wants to know our opinion on the Assassin's Creed Valhalla video game that's coming out. So take that one away, Dave.
So, I will not play it because it promotes... how can I say this? It promotes sodomy. We'll say it promotes sodomy. You're allowed to have like same sex relationships in it, and I am definitely not going to play it. It is way too paused. It is way too Hollywoodized. I'm not playing that. But if it hits a bunch of normies and makes them go crazy like the nurse lady does and turns her world upside down and gets them acquainted with Germanic spirituality, even if it's 100% authentic or not, it's a step in the right direction. Why not?
Right, and for my opinion here, I am most definitely going to try to play it. I still have the Assassin's Creed Odyssey installed on my computer, and I've been playing it, you know, just a couple weeks ago, and I am quite enthralled with it. I love the entire series there, and I'm definitely down for it. If I have to say, you know, I think probably you're overestimating how much pause is going to be in it. Like, even with the Greeks in classical, you know, the classical era, they don't have anything homosexual really in there. And if I read anything, the way they're doing it is when you start the game, you can pick whether you want to start as like a female or a male. And they're making all of the romance options just work for whichever version you have. So it's not really homosexual. It's just like the female romance option is still accessible to a male. So, like, you know, just don't pick it. I mean, you know, they're not going to throw it in your face. At least they don't in the Odyssey. So, I mean, you know, it's fine.
So we got a shout from Bartleby. Donates a diamond. Says, hail Dave. Hail Christians. Hail to you, Bartleby. Much love, my friend. And Luke Mason says some of those Karens are kind of hot. hey, you know what? Karens are better than like goofy pink-haired, you know, face piercing, neck tattoo, disgusting pigs that walk around from college campuses. Karens are miles better than them. Like those creatures are barely even human. Karens are just an annoyance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they have an overlap with the boomer though, and
yeah.
The boomer is my natural enemy.
Well, you know, and if you're like, hey, you got to choose one of these ladies, you got to take a Karen that, like, you know, like a good looking Karen, Or you got to take one of these, like, you know, sloppy pink-haired, you know, hog-bellied witches, like one of these, you know, horrible goblins, these monstrosities. Like, which one are you going to take? Are you going to take the hot MILF Karen, or are you going to take the mutant?
Well, I think it really depends on how far gone they are. Like, if they've just, like, already, you know, like, fucked 30 different guys, then you can't do it then, right? Like, it's far gone. But if it's just, like, a belief they have, they can change that. They're, like, what, 20? You can change their mind. It'll be fine.
I'm just saying, like, if you put me in that decision between, like, a pseudo-conservative, bitchy, like, entitled Karen, that's also kind of hot. Maybe probably comes from a good family with some money, or just like one of these, like, just like shambling monstrosities, like these, like, you know, sloppy hog-bellied horrors, these like slack-jawed, mouth-breathing, pink-haired hags. You know, obviously I'm going to take the Karen every single time. I'll just, like, you know, just get away from me. Just shut up. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just do one of them. Like, what's she gonna do? I'm bigger and stronger than her. Those pigs, like the pigs I'm talking about, there's no redemption for them. Like, I don't even know why we're letting them. Like, why are they even alive? Like, why are we even, like, entertaining their existence? This has gotten way off the rails.
But we're now at an outlier here. We're going to have the entire episode. But actually, I just noticed here, we got to go to Focus Farmer for the halftime.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, everybody. So we have a awesome video from our buddy Focus Farmer. We're going to play that for you now. I believe he's going to go out into his garden. He's going to pick some stuff, and he's going to cook something up for us. And I can't wait to see it.
My absolute favorite thing.
It's the best. It's the best. So many hails and many thanks to Focus Farmer. You guys are going to love this. Check it out.
Farmer. Today we're going to talk about things that are growing in May. And typically when you look at garlic, that's not something you would think about growing that's edible at this time in May. But the reality is these little guys right here, the scrapes, are quite edible. So when we take a look at this, and you can zoom in here a little bit on this guy, this little part right here is where we want to cut. And what we're going to take this and do is we're going to take this and we're going to fry this up with a little bit of Benton's ham. And Benton's ham is a Tennessee tradition here. It's a smoked 12-month smoked ham, and it's going to be absolutely delicious. And we're going to serve this over some greens. And I'm going to show you guys how I'm getting greens right now in my greenhouse. So we'll go take a look at that. I've already cut a couple of these, and I'll see you in the kitchen in a minute, but let's go take a look at my greens. Okay, guys, here's how I grow lettuce pretty much half of the year, and it's super easy. These are just little flower planters or something from Lowe's, and I simply fill them up and put seeds in them. It's that simple. This is only about one pack of seeds for two trays, so it's super cheap to be able to do this, and as you can see, it produces quite a bit. And what I do is I simply come through here with scissors or a really sharp knife and just simply cut them. So this is going to be the bed of that garlic scrape that we're making in there. So it is extremely hot in here. So I'm looking forward to getting into the kitchen. This is a hot house, so it's super hot. So I'll see you guys. Okay, guys, we're back in the kitchen here. So I've got my scrapes here. So I also went and procured a little bit of chives. This is the lettuce that came out of that planter, and honestly, it didn't even hardly make a dent. You can see how much it produced, quite a bit. So I've also got some onions from outside too, and some nice hot house hot peppers, so my favorite. Can't wait. So what we're going to do is we're going to take these scrapes and we're going to go ahead and put them in the frying pan over here. Oops, they got a casualty right there. So what I've got is a little bit of onions. I have the Benton's bacon, and this is some oregano. I'm just going to simply put these guys in here, and I'm going to stir this up and fry this for probably 2 to 3 minutes. So it won't take long at all, and you can see that the ham is nice and browned up here. It's a salted ham, So I really don't need to add any salt to this whatsoever. But what I'm going to do is just kind of let this saute in for a little bit. And one of the things that I'm going to do is, just in a second, I'm going to add some wine. So I'll see you guys in just a second when this cooks down, maybe 2 to 3 minutes. We'll add some wine, and we're ready to go ahead and serve a salad, which is something unique because all of the cooking that I've done up to this point has basically been meat. So for all of you semi-vegetarians out there like me who like a little bacon and ham in their salads and stuff like that, here's to the vegetarians. And I'll see you. Okay, guys, I'm back with some nice cheap white wine. I'm just going to put that in there. About that much. I have no idea how much that was. Here, it's going to be fine. And I'm going to kind of just stir this in a little bit. What's nice is that the scrapes give kind of a garlic flavor, but it's a really mild garlic flavor, to be quite honest with you. And the salad will really have a nice flavor with the ham in it as well. So I'm going to let this simmer for another minute or two, and then we'll put it in the salad, and we will be having that with some gumbo. So don't think I'm not going to be eating a little meat tonight. So hope everyone enjoys my first vegetarian dish.
All right, man, that looked awesome, man. Much love, many blessings to Folkish Farmer. And he's been doing Jack Young's workout routine. Jack Young's been training him. He's looking pretty good, man, looking pretty good for an old man. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's what we were talking about on the stream, man. Yeah. Jack Young, he's really got it going on for him.
Yeah, I was telling Tristan, I was like, we can't be letting him get like that. We got to go kick his ass. Yeah,
right? Like, you're already, like, you got money, you got, like, a wife, you got, like, property and wealth and shit. Like, yeah. you can't also be Jack. No. Have to
yeah. We can't let you get at that high level, bub. We got to take you down a couple pegs. You're kind of like making us feel bad about ourselves. You know, I mean, that's not going to work. So, yeah, I'm just kidding. But Folks Farmer is our good buddy. He's a good friend of the show, our colleague over at Neurona Society. He does so much good work, man. He does these videos for us, and he posts them on his channel. So you go check it out over on his channel, The Folkish Farmer, or you can also go subscribe to the YouTube channel for Neurona Society, where he posts them all as well. You can see every single video one of these times I'll do a Folkish Farmer marathon of all of his cooking videos. It's absolutely great, all that stuff. So, yeah, and I see Luke Mason really likes it. Dude, this is bitching. Man, Folks Farmer's got so much great content for us, man. So, actually, guys, help us out here. We're trying to build our D-Live. We're trying to build us up. We're trying to build the Bog up. We're trying to get Folkish Farmer out there and stuff like that. So, you know, tell your friends. Drop Bog stuff in your chats on Telegram or Discord or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Give the Bog a shout. Give the Bog a shout. Help us out here because we're kind of we're newcomers here at D-Live. So, let's see what's going on in this chat here. Bartleby says, Dave Martell, what is the research group Tristan belongs to? You mentioned it last week but didn't catch it. It is Arya Kasha. You go to ariakasha.com. He is the – I'll let him tell you. He's right here.
You're right. So I just put it in there in the chat. That's how you do it. We actually have a website. You can read all of our content. That's the research institute that is run by me and Kerwin. We primarily specialize in comparative mythology between the Nordic and the Vedic strains of the faith. And, you know, we do all kinds of things about etymology and history and comparative elements between both of them. A lot of it is, you know, very new, interesting things that go into, you know, the mythologies. And a lot of it is our own original work. We don't just regurgitate, you know, historical theories and whatnot. And though we do question quite a bit of them, and we do run with some of them. You can check us up on Facebook as well. We do post constantly, you know, it's constant information. And, come check us out.
I'll tell you guys, Arya Kasha is brilliant. I actually, you know, when I like reached out to these guys, and I was like, man, you guys' work is brilliant, and we started being buddies and stuff like that. Now Tristan's my co-host and everything. But make sure to check out Arya Kasha, dude. I swear it is groundbreaking stuff. These guys are coming up with stuff that they're not even talking about in universities. You're going to read articles on Aryakasha that they're going to talk about in universities in like 10 years. That's how groundbreaking a lot of it is. It's excellent stuff. Excellent stuff. And speaking of, I actually wanted to pop this out since it's relevant right now, since we're talking about Srujan put down Nordic Aryan Sangra, and we got Aryakasha. Here's a question that's a good one. I got this one for you, Tristan. One of my friends asked, he said he is also true. However, there are no Hoffs. There are no temples in his area. Can he go practice or go worship at a Hindu temple and still remain true to his faith?
Well, I mean, that is a very interesting question, and it requires a couple different things, I'd have to say. So I guess I'll just start from the beginning. First of all, you're going to want to really familiarize yourself with what Hindu temple you're actually going for. Just because they claim to be Hindu or Vedic does not mean that they actually are. It's quite common for, you know, what amounts to like Hindu Wiccanism to, you know, especially to say that they're, you know, Vedic derived when they're nothing of the sort. So, you know, make sure you're going to a nice temple. It's Orthodox, you know, lots of other Indian people go there, and it's, you know, it's on the up and up, right? Secondarily, I would say that I recognize that the Vedic deities and the Nordic deities are fundamentally the same beings. So if you go there and worship Shiva, it's the same being as Odin. It's just a different visage, a different cultural outlet. Though I would say that you should probably make some sort of a note to the Shiva visage before you actually do that. You know, like, be respectful, be open about the fact that, you know, you're wanting to worship Odin, but you're going to pay respect to Shiva first because it is his house. And also, you know, Hinduism has the benefit of actually having a priest caste. Go talk to the priests there and see if they're down with it. And they might be actually rather interested and supportive of the behavior, or they might not. And if they're not, then, I mean, don't do it. It is their house, right?
They don't keep going.
Right. Hey, don't be a dick about it.
Yeah. We got a Gini from Old Folkish Farmer. He says, seriously, check out Jack Young Fitness. It even works for old men. And I'll point out, I was just joking, Folks Farmer is only like a couple years older than me. He's not really an old man. But man, thank you so much for the Gini, Folks Farmer, rolling up with a Gini. And yes, check out Jack Young Fitness. I believe he's on Instagram. I'm not sure if he has a website, but just find him, man. Jack Young is brilliant. I actually have some of his videos loaded up on OBS here, workout tips and stuff like that. The guy is a freak of nature. The guy is incredible fitness expert and stuff like that. So many hails to Folks Farmer and hails to Jack Young also.
So let's see, go to the next question here. We'll go back to a question from our good friend Mitty. I would like to know more about Alu, about what it is and where the concept comes from, mm-hmm. but that might be too broad.
So we could do a whole episode on Alu. And in fact, I've been trying to get our buddy, your good old brother of Tristan's in arms, Tristan H, to come on and talk about Alu, because he has a lot of really cool theories, and he's really extrapolated on the concept of Alu, which a lot of people, like mainstream anthropologists, just say that it means brewing or has to do with beer, and it probably does have to do with brewing beer, but Alu is a series of runes, Ansus, Lagas, Urus, and it appears on many, many sacred artifacts, such as like amulets, bracelets, urns, ceremonial, like it's all over the place, Alu. And what we have got from it is that Alu is representative of the three wells in the underworld. And it's kind of like a point of creation sort of thing. That's like the eternal wells. And there's a lot that goes into it. It harkens back to primordial creation. So it's like layers and layers of meaning in Alu. So that's why you see a lot of people do the Alu chants and stuff. If you go and you look up Galdr on, I have a Galdr video on YouTube, but if you go look up, Srujan says Alu is cognate with Om. I would agree. I agree. This is my theory, but for example, if you hear You know, a lot of times Hindus, when they do Om, they go, Om. They kind of like start with their mouth open, Om. And they have like that sound about it. That sound is the same sound. It's the same, I guess, it's, what is it called? Phonetics or whatever. With the, you know, Om, Alu, you know, Au in it. And also, because, you know, these sounds and stuff, this has a lot of spiritual meaning and stuff to it. So,
I would actually disagree with that, because we do have a real good cognate for the Hindu Om already in the Nordic sources. One of Odin's names is Omi, which means the resounding one.
Yeah, he who makes
so
the
I think,
sound.
Right. So I think it's more likely that Om or Omi was actually the, you know, something we just don't really have any real records of, but our ancestors would have known it as being intimately connected with Odin specifically.
Yeah. Well, you know, we could get into it more. So let's look at the three wells. The three wells, you look at how when Odin hangs on the tree, and then there's the whole thing about him being inverse and stands over the wells, and he dips his eye in the well, and Odin is completely connected to the wells in so many different ways and so many different stories. If he's connected to the wells, and the wells are at the base of the tree, and Odin is the tree, and man is also tree, then Alu is connected to Odin, and connected to Omi, and connected to Yggdrasil, and connected to ritual. You know what I mean? So direct, exact cognate to the sound Om and stuff like that. You know, it's like what you say, Tristan. There's not a one-for-one comparison with things anywhere. But as far as it having the same kind of usage, I believe so. I'm sure Tristan will disagree, but, you know, it's okay.
Well, it's not particularly that I disagree. I think there's not enough evidence to actually definitively say so. So we're on to the issue of it being an interpretive concern. So I don't want to say that that's wrong or that's right, because I don't really know.
Yeah. So I will say this, is that that is my personal gnosis. That is my unverified personal gnosis.
But I mean, I would say I don't think it's internally contradictory. Like, it works, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I just can't say definitively, like, yeah, that's what our ancestors believed. Like, I don't want to sign my name to that and then tell people, like, no, you should definitely believe that. It's canon.
Yeah. But they certainly explore it. If you are interested in the concepts of Alu, and I put it up on my Primordial Path Telegram channel. So, and that's another thing. You check out t.me/primordialpath, and I put a lot of stuff up there, a lot of, you know, philosophical takes and stuff like that. But I shared it there. Tristan H. wrote a whole big thing about Alu, and it's really fascinating stuff. So one of these times we'll get him on, and we'll talk all about Alu. So we'll get way into it.
Man, forget about Focus Farmer. We're going to deal with this other guy who's stealing my name.
Yeah.
There can only be one Tristan, motherfucker.
Yeah. Isn't there a Facebook group full of Tristans, and there's like the Tristonian Legion or something like that?
Yeah. I was in it for a little bit, and they have a nice flag. It's like, it's pretty cool. But yeah. So we'll go on to the next question here, and it says, what are the most noteworthy Indo-European and Egyptian cognates and connections, if there are any? That is a very complicated question, but the very simplified answer is that there aren't any, because Egyptians are not Indo-Europeans.
No.
They're also not Semites. They're most closely related to Middle Eastern agrarian farmers back before they split into different groups like Semites and Iranians and stuff like that.
They spoke a Semitic language, though.
The Egyptians, Egyptian Coptic is not a Semitic language.
I thought it was.
No, it's not. But like I said, it's way too old before, it was before Semites were actually a thing, and they're most closely Mesopotamian, just broadly. Though it is true that after, I think, the 17th dynasty, their royal families and the elite structure are Indo-Europeans, because they married into the Hittites. And the Hittites are Indo-Europeans.
And the Greeks, still. They have a lot of Greek blood in there, too.
Yeah, the Greek came much, much after. The 17th dynasty is actually pretty classical Egypt. Like, Ramses the Great had red hair. This entire lineage were basically Indo-Europeans. They were, paternally. And we get that's where we get a slight connection here, in which Set like the actual deity set from Set, is probably some sort of resemblance to either the Skyfather or the Thunderer, that they took basically from the Hittites, like the original. So there was this a raiding band of Indo-Europeans, someone I think they're probably Indo-Europeans, who ended up conquering Egypt and taking over. And that's, you know, they worship Set, basically. So originally, it's probably an Indo-European figure, and they just kind of syncretized it into their mythology. But as a whole, Egyptian mythology is not Indo-European.
And Srujan said the Ptolemies. That's actually who I was referring to when I was talking
about. Right. The Ptolemies are a much, much later Greek dynasty. I think they're like the 26th dynasty or something. So, I mean, there's like 2,000 years between Ramses and the Ptolemies. It's a long time.
Yeah. And how this is kind of in how long Egypt was around. The really old dynasties that were part of Egypt, we are closer in time to Cleopatra than Cleopatra was to like the first dynasties of Egypt. That's how old that stuff is.
The famous quote goes is that we're closer to the Romans than the Romans are to the building of the Great Pyramid.
Pretty crazy. And going into the antediluvian stuff, speaking of Ramses, I believe it was Ramses II commented on how the Egyptians had no idea where the Sphinx came from. The Sphinx was actually buried in sand in his time. So
yeah, the Sphinx is something like thousands and thousands of years more ancient than the Great Pyramid is. Like they actually just built it in front of the Sphinx.
So they don't even, like, the Sphinx was ancient to the ancient Egyptians. So
yeah, and you know what's also interesting about the Sphinx is that it appears to have been buried and re-unearthed and buried again like multiple times over the years. So we're not even sure, like, when the Great Pyramid came up, like, was the Sphinx even known to be there?
Yeah, pretty incredible. All right, what's the next question we got?
Well, I think that's all the ones on Facebook. I know you got some personal ones, so let's go to them.
And we're running out of time, so we'll blow through these real quick. Here's a quick one. This one we get a lot. Starting reading for people that are getting into Germanic tradition. These are my recommendations. Either Austro-Native European Spirituality by Stephen McNallan, or The Nature of Austro by Mark Perrier. Otis book by Mark Perrier, and then the Odinist or the Austro Edda, preferably the Odinist Edda if you're new. Those are the beginners that I recommend.
Right, I always recommend, and it is a bit academically deep. So you know, if you can't handle it, you know, you're not up to that kind of thing, don't worry about it. But I do recommend everyone read The Culture of the Teutons before you get into the faith, because understanding the culture and the mindset of our ancestors colors everything else. So you don't want to have to relearn the shit that you've already learned. It's better just to start from the beginning with this understanding of how they viewed the world and how they viewed themselves and society. And then you can go on to the religious aspect, and it'll fit like a glove after that.
Mm-hmm. Soner wants to know about the Old Norse episode. The file is messed up. I forgot to record it on here on DLive when I recorded on streamed on DLive, and I have to rip it from DLive and then convert it, and it's not converting right. So I'm working on it. It might be lost, so we might have to do another one. So I'll have to hit up Keith and see if he wants to do another one. It was a really great episode, but So what's the difference between Odinist and Austro Edda? Odinist Edda is more anglicized. It's going to be easier for English readers. And people that are more familiar with the Old Norse language, the Austro Edda is going to be good. So let's get into the next question here. Are you cleared out on your end?
Yeah, I'm cleared out on my
end. So starting reading, let's go Extreme Human Antiquity. I already did that. Thoughts on Religio Romana?
The Religio Romana, as in specifically the Roman, like the practice of the Roman faith and the Greco-Roman faith in general.
Yeah.
I'm very supportive of people to take up the practice, especially if they have heritage in, you know, the Italian region or the Greek period, that sort of thing. Absolutely. You should definitely revive this, worship them. It's probably less reconstructive than a lot of people, like the Irish or some of the Baltics or Slavic pagans. You know, we just have much more knowledge about the Greek Romans, but yeah, absolutely, fully supportive of it.
Yeah, I 100% support Religio Romana, and I support Hellenismos as well. Beautiful traditions. A lot of really, really smart people come out of those traditions. I have quite a few friends that are into, and we're starting to see a blossom of the Greek tradition, which is very beautiful and very cool. And there are boys, man. There are friends in polytheism. So much love and much respect to them.
And you know what? It's very cool that they preserved some of their original temples and stuff as historical and cultural monuments. So they can, you know, some of the Hellenismos people can actually go to the Parthenon and go worship. I think it's really cool.
And there's actually some old Roman temples that still stand in England and in other places in Europe. So people can go and just worship at these little tiny temples and bathhouses and stuff like that. Very cool.
You know what? That brings up to mind many, many years ago, you know, maybe five at this point, my good friend Nick Shai is an Indian friend of mine, and he was traveling through Italy, and he found himself in front of the temple of Julius Caesar, during which point we communicated with him that he should sacrifice in front of it, and we were going to make him our group's patron deity. Divus Aulius, the son of Aphrodite, son of Venus.
Very cool. Yeah, you know, I'm not one of them guys that hates. Yep, was Rome the first, you know, globo homo? Yeah, it was. But as far as now looking back, as far as an ancient tradition and stuff like that, I have zero, you know, resentment or zero. I'm not a kind of guy that latches on to victim complexes and stuff. I think it's weak. So I much love to the Romans. Much love to the people practicing that faith. Much love to the people practicing the Greek faith. And I look forward to seeing them blossom and grow, and maybe sometime we can go check out one of their rituals sometime and go to, you know, if they start building here in the United States. So hail to them. Next up, we got what was life like for the average person in ancient times?
Well, that is a very broad question when we talk about the ancient times. I mean,
which
are we talking
times?
About, like, right? I mean,
which
ancient times are we? Yeah, I mean, it really depends here. I mean, if we're going to talk about, like, the Germanic people during the, you know, like the Viking Age, then most people lived in an agrarian system in which they lived a household in which maybe about 30 people resided. We're talking about, like, a principal family and all of their retainers, all of their servants, their slaves. Multiple generations of the family would live there, so you, your parents, your grandparents, nieces and nephews, that sort of thing. And, you know, it's scattered across the countryside in a very agrarian landscape. They didn't come together, they didn't build towns and cities and that sort of thing, except for there are some merchant runs on the coast, but those, you know, maybe 1,000 people lived there in them total.
Yeah. Well, they actually unearthed some pretty old settlements of up to 20, 30,000 people, they believe, that were in Ukraine about, like, we're talking early Bronze Age. So that's pretty incredible stuff. You guys could go check that out. That's like a fresh discovery, archaeological discovery. But as far as what was life like for these people, obviously the life for, like what Tristan was talking about, somebody in Iron Age Scandinavia was very different than a citizen of ancient Rome. You know, I mean, obviously, it depends where you're living, who, what people, it depends what, you know, time period. It really, it's vastly different. Somebody that lived in Rome, in ancient Rome, probably had more in common with us today than somebody that Tristan's describing. They lived a very kind of...
You know, oh, absolutely. I mean, especially when you get into, like, the height of Rome during, like, Nero, when he had half the city burned or resurrected in marble. We're talking about people who are basically urbanites at that point. Like, they live in the city. They've never been outside of a city. In fact, one of the main ways that the Germanic tribes, like, overran the Roman legions was because the Roman legions were so used to urban, like, landscape settings that they were terrified of the forest.
Yeah.
Like, just wilderness. Like, absolutely terrified them.
Yeah. They weren't suited for it. The Roman, the way that they were outfitted, you know, and here's another thing. This is actually a misconception. A lot of people say that the Germanics were so much bigger than the Romans. Yes, on average, the average Germanic, you know, I mean, you know, there's the whole thing about people on average were like 5'2" back then or whatever. The average Germanic back in the day was not 5'2". The average Germanic back in the day was the same size as us.
Right, they were about 5'9". So, maybe like an inch shorter. And you can account that for like nutrition differences, right? Like it was just harder back then.
And if 5'9" is the average, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be 6'5" people walking around.
Right. I mean, they definitely would have been, six foot tall people in the warrior caste all day.
And in ancient Rome, in order to join the army, I think you had to be like 5'10" or something. You had to be big to join the
No,
Roman army.
not in the Roman army. The
Yep.
there's actually a rather famous anecdote in which the Roman legions average or the ideal size of a Roman legionnaire was decided at 5'3".
False. There's records of what the requirements were to join and become a Roman legionnaire. And then it gets even bigger for centurions and stuff like that. In order to join the army, in order to sign up, you had to be a bigger guy. For real.
Well, I would be very interested in taking a look at that. I've always assumed the otherwise.
No, for real. That's it's the real deal. And also, so the size of the Roman legions compared to the Germanics at that time wasn't that like the whole conception that the Romans, these tiny little Romans, marched into the Teutoburg Forest, and then these big, red and blonde haired giants came descended upon them. Yes, they were bigger on average. Yes, they were probably broader. They were. I mean, if you look at a guy from Holland compared to a guy from Calabria, Italy, today, obviously the guy from Holland's bigger. It's just the way that it is.
Oh yeah, even Tacitus makes a mention of that the Romans greatly admire the Germanic body and figure because of how strong and broad it is.
Yeah, but no, that go. Tristan is 100% absolutely right about they didn't like the forest. We're talking ancient Germania. Bronze Age Germania was overrun. I mean, it wasn't just like there was a forest here.
It was the primeval European forest and filled with swamps as well.
Yeah, filled with
Like it's
swamps.
nothing like modern Germany.
Exactly. Filled with swamps. It was, and here's the thing, the Romans were outfitted to live in the Mediterranean. You know what I mean? You've seen the Roman, what are they called, the caligas or whatever, the caligs, the sandals that they wore. They wore open-toe shoes. They kind of wear short sleeves. They brought some stuff to keep them warm and stuff too, but they weren't ready for how cold it used to get in those forests at that elevation and going into Germania during that time, and how wet and gross. It was not a cool. It was swampy. It was wet. It was dark. It was cold. It was a lousy place to go. And if you caught there during the winter, it was a wrap. It was a wrap. So they used
And
to.
these guys keep wearing like wolf helmets and then attacking us at night and killing us. And they were not having it.
No, it was a. There's a reason that the Romans never conquered east of the Rhine. They sent some skirmishes in, and they like when they met on the battlefield, of course the Romans beat them. But as far as longevity and having a long occupation in Germania was just it just wasn't possible. It wasn't possible. And also you got to think about it like this: we're getting into religion. The ancient Germanic people, they fought as a general rule. It was like they were there was no. There was a warrior caste, obviously. There were people, but everybody could fight. I mean, it was a part of their culture, fighting, wrestling, stuff like that. They didn't care if they died. They would bring me death, send me to the next life. They didn't care. I mean, death was nothing to them. And the Romans, they didn't want to die. They had a nice villa back home. They had a pretty wife. They had some, I mean, they had some what were the Roman coins called? Drakkar or whatever, I can't remember their.
Denali.
Yeah, so they had money and a place. They were wealthy people back home. They didn't want to die in some swamp in the north. They wanted to go home. So, fighting these guys, it was tough. It was hard, and they didn't win in the long run.
Yeah, and I was going to say something about the Romans here that really had to go into it with the Germanic people. Oh, that's what it was. Is that As I was mentioning before, that the Germanic people lived in, spread out homesteads, like 30 people here, and then like way far away, there was another homestead with 30 people. So they were used to, the Roman legions were used to like a city civilization sort of thing, where they could go someplace and that's a major power center. They could take it over, and then the war's over. Or what exactly are you going to do? You can't occupy the entirety of the Germanic countryside,
No.
like all this fucking forest and swamp and shit and. Like, there is no central power structure that they can just take over and then end the war. There's always just, like, more, you know, homesteads somewhere out in the forest that just keep building up with people and then sending them over to you.
Yeah, and they couldn't, here's another thing, and, here's the thing with the Germanic tribes is that, you know, these occupations, the Romans would march in, they would try to take over for a little while, and then they'd have to leave, and they'd come back, and there'd just be a fresh batch, a new generation of people. They couldn't kill the Germanics faster than they could breed. You know what I mean? That was another problem that they had. It was just, you know, it's just, and what Tristan's talking about with these homesteads and stuff like that, anybody here that has watched Last Kingdom does a really good job of displaying this. You know, I think it's like the first few episodes or whatever. The main character Uhtred is living with his new Scandinavian family, and they have this big, giant, kind of open two-story longhouse, and everybody kind of has like their cubby room and stuff like that. And there's like literally like you know, a bunch of people living there. That's how it was. You know, they had longhouses where a lot of people would live together. The idea of the nuclear family wasn't it. You had the big dad boss man, grandpa, that was in charge of everything, and then, you know, everybody just stayed. You know what I mean? There was no moving out.
I mean, even the main economic activity was you found a home where, you know, like a rich patron, and then you worked for him, and you know, herded his sheep and his cattle, and he gave you food and weapons, and you fought with them, and that was just everyone's life.
Sounds pretty lit, actually.
Oh, it's very lit, right? I mean, if we could go back to that, you know, like, modern circumstances and economics don't really, prohibit it now, but, you know, people weren't meant to live in a nuclear family where, you know, you and your wife and your kid and that's it on a white picket fence in, you know, suburbia. You know, people aren't meant for that. We're meant to live in larger communities with, you know, family structures and social ties and whatnot.
Yeah, 100%. I actually reject the idea of nuclear family. I think the communal living is better. Yeah, you know I mean, is, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's my take on it. And as far as the average person's life in ancient times, Hollywood does a good job of making it look like that every single person in ancient times had a horrible, dark, you know, life with that everybody died and everybody got diseases and it was just horrible. It's just, it wasn't that bad. It really wasn't. Most people, like, just lived normal. Like, there's probably a lot of people that might have seen a couple fights in their lifetime, and they just lived their agrarian lifestyle and chilled, and there's a lot of training.
Well, you know, there's a lot of simple pleasures that everyone can take a good hand in. If you have all kinds of meat and produce and grain, and you have alcohol, and you have, you know, a bunch of social people you can talk to and you've known your entire life, and that's it. I mean, most people would be pretty satisfied with that, I think.
They're just chilling.
Right. I mean, you know, you have all these things. You're constantly safe. You know, you constantly have food on the table. You know, you have a community where everyone knows you and you know everyone else and generations after you. Yeah, I mean, it's simple pleasures.
And I believe, speaking of Tacitus, he actually mentioned he considered the Germanics kind of loafers. He thought they were kind of lazy.
Right, so they're... There's a that's actually a fun thing that I like to bring up to people. You see, because there's a Prussianism that was coming. No, I meant it basically during the 18th century, and it was like the Protestant work ethic, and everyone was supposed to like be super industrious and initiative in industrial society at that point. But that's not the traditional Germanic structure. In Germanic structure, there were obviously a very large slave caste who did most of the actual manual labor. And then free men had like basic like tasks like go with the slaves and make sure they're herding cattle correctly. And then all the warrior caste, if they weren't hunting or fighting, they basically laid around feasting and getting drunk and like having a great old time. That's basically what Germanic people did all day, every day. And the Romans thought these people were like horrendously lazy. Like Tacitus said something like, It strikes me as odd that a people so inured to war could be so given to laziness.
Yeah. So they were just like, you know, and also here's another thing, man. They had long winters. And when there's long winters, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? You're not out farming.
Well, especially in the German wilderness. Like, if it snows and there's 5 feet of snow outside, we're not doing anything, man. We're just going to sit inside the house and drink.
Yeah,
that's all you have to do.
You're just chilling and partying and hanging out with your boys, and You know, then you do your religious stuff and you pray to the gods and you just have a good life. You just live a good, simple life. And there's, you know, that sounds better than what we're doing now with the hamster wheel and the modernist hamster wheel. You know what I mean? Just get your stuff done, do your work. And that's what the thing is about agrarian life. And this is, you know, if you go do research and then go fast forward a little bit into, we're talking the Middle Ages, you know, peasants in the Middle Ages, they didn't have, you know, this terrible, horrible life that everybody was talking about. You know, you see, like, you see these Hollywood movies where they're, like, eating black gruel and they're all dirty and filthy and missing teeth. And, like, that's kind of the opposite. They had a pretty carefree life where they, you know, goofed off. Yeah, they did a lot of hard work. But you know what? They also goofed off a lot and had a lot of parties and, like, did a lot
You know, agrarian life is really interesting because it's not as hard as most people would think it is because it's seasonal occupation farming, right? So you have an intense period of activity every couple, you know, every year there's like a couple weeks where everyone has to do everything immediately, like 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day of work to get everything into the field and into the field and planted and everything like that. And then the rest of the time, you're just chilling out. Like, there's not a whole lot of work to do.
Our boy Chris donated an ice cream. Thank you, sir. Yeah, so, and there's another thing about the diet. Man, let me tell you, here's the biggest misconception about ancient times. Ancient people had better diets than we do today. They had less stress. They lived happier, even with the sicknesses and the infant mortality and the war. They had a easier, better life than us and a better diet. The average, like the peasant in the Middle Ages that Hollywood displays is he's like sickly. They ate salmon every day. They had fresh bread every day. They ate fresh produce every day. They had booze in the house.
All of their meat was organic, grass fed.
They were healthy people. They were healthy people, and you know, they it's just not true that they were these, like, you know, maybe some place. Obviously, there's droughts and there was times of pestilence and plague and there was times like that. But during, like, regular, you didn't see any, like, you know, fat, sickly American looking people. You didn't see any AmeriFat, you know, burger land people. They didn't exist. It was strong, good old boys that ate salmon. Let me tell you, before industrialization, you know, I mean, there's stories that these people had so much salmon that they, like, had to, like, throw some of it out. Like, this, they were just, the world was flourishing with fresh, you know,
protein. Well, you know what? In Iceland, there are records of people doing, like, strongman activities, powerlifting, that sort of thing, that made records that are only now being broken with modern training techniques and diet. So you can imagine back then, there was people like Hathor Bjornsson walking around, and that was just normal. Like, that's the kind of diets they could actually have.
So this illusion that your life now is the best it's ever been is the biggest lie you've ever been told. You're in.
Oh, let me just say.
Go ahead.
In the medieval period, a medieval peasant farmer worked less often than a normal person working 40 hours a week. They had more time off, better free time, longer. You know, they just had way more free time than we do. You work more than they do for less.
And you have worse food.
And no civil society, no civil governance, no barely any sort of socialization. You know, most people can't even make friends, right?
Exactly. We are in the Dark Ages now. That wasn't the Dark Ages. That was not the Dark Ages. Yeah, you know, think about it. Let me ask you guys something. I'm a guy, you know, my wife does the shopping. You know, we pay for our food. You guys out there that are working men that run your household and stuff like that, how often do you eat salmon? How often are you eating salmon? How often are you eating steak and beef and fresh stuff? You know, how often?
You having pork chops every night?
I mean, we do okay. We do okay at my house, but, you know, we're not eating salmon every single night. Salmon is a treat. Medieval peasants had salmon all day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people really have to, you know, there's the English Enclosure Acts during the 18th century, I believe. It might have been the early 19th century. Mm-hmm. Actually, what was a thing their parliament passed to force the ruralites into the cities because by taking away the public land so that they literally couldn't just stay where in their agrarian paradise. So that they could have them for, like, factories and shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's something they literally had to legally invent, because otherwise the farmers were like, no, we're good.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. That's why, you know, I get on, I rip on capitalism and socialism and all the modern stuff. Man, if we could use technology that we have now to create like a kind of old school, like neo-traditionalist agrarian futurist kind of society.
Wouldn't that be the best?
That would be the best. That would be the best. I mean, instead of having slaves, we got machines that do it all for us. And we just do, we do our regular work. We do, we do, like, do stuff that, like, Folks Farmer does, like growing lettuce and picking stuff and all, you know, that stuff. And then we have, like, automated health care and, you know, all that kind of stuff that's just provided for us, because we can just 3D print whatever we want. Yeah. So it's like, imagine having the life that our ancestors did in these very simple, beautiful times, but aided with modern technology. That's what we advocate for. That's what I advocate for. Because this industrial capitalist working, man, you guys in the chat that are Americans, how many 60-hour work weeks have you seen in your life? A lot, right? I know me, man. I've clocked 70, 80-hour work weeks in my life. Probably more. Who knows? Crazy. I've worked like, we're talking back-to-back doubles, like, all week. I've worked, like, yeah, there's been times I worked, like, you know, 4 weeks, like a whole month in a row before I had a day off and shit. Our ancestors, that would have been alien. They would be like, why are you stupid? They would look at me like, oh, I'm crazy.
No, they would literally go to civil insurrection and start killing people.
Yeah.
And like, this has happened before. And their response is, I'm going to kill people until it stops.
So it's, you know, it's our ancestors, they did not. Hollywood, who like they sit in their comfy little thrones on top of this monstrous technocratic system that we have now. They profit off of this system. So they're going to tell you that our ancestors had this horrible, awful, dark existence and that we're better off now. It's like 1984. You know what I mean? 1984. They're just lying to us.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just the modern newspeak.
Yeah, modern newspeak. What do they say? What do they say? It's like in 1984, war is freedom, something like all that. It's been a long time since I read
it. Yeah, war is freedom, peace is slavery.
Yeah, all that stuff. So, Mr. Tristan, go ahead.
I was going to say, we've always been at war with East Asia.
Yeah. Yeah, we've always been at war with East Asia. Yeah, that's true. Bartleby donates a diamond. Many, many thanks, many blessings to you, Bartleby. We got another metal stream coming up very soon. I got some more relics for you guys, but that's going to be coming up very soon. But
I might have to join that way. I'll put out some of the stuff I don't really listen to.
Yeah, Tristan, you are welcome to come on a metal stream at any time. Our buddy in the chat there, Luke, he's going to come on. He runs a band called Imminent Rain. That's really woke and really based and really badass, and we're going to get him on. We were supposed to do it like last week, but my wife had doctor's stuff, and it's just, you know, pregnant wife and kids, and it gets crazy. So
right, she came down with the pregnancy, really inconsiderate.
Yeah, yeah, what a bitch! Oh my god. So anyway, Tristan, we are 20 minutes over, but we were having a great time talking about this kind of stuff, and so we kept it going here. Do you have anything to say in conclusion?
No, I think we pretty much handled everything. We did rapid fire 20 questions, and. You know, it was fun. You definitely have to do it again.
I love the Q&A. I love Q&A because it kind of tests you. You know what I mean? It's like off the top of your head, what can you drum up to answer these questions? It's good stuff.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun.
Very cool. All right, folks. Make sure you follow here. Make sure you like, subscribe, share over on the YouTube channel, the Dave Martell YouTube channel. And also like, subscribe, share over at Folkish Farmer. Check out, he's got a YouTube channel. Go check out Nerona Society. Go to Nerona.org. Go over to AriaKasha.com. And also, the Ader's book is out. Ader's book is out. I'm going to, when I get my copy, we're going to do a lot of shilling on that. That's really, really cool work. So, Soner asked a question about Greek gods. I'm sorry, I missed it, brother. But we'll do another Q&A and we'll answer. But we got to get going here. It's getting late. But much love, many blessings to everybody in the chat, man. I know it's tough right now, man. I know it's crazy. I know everybody's getting sick of being inside. But you know, the stuff that we're talking about, how our ancestors, you know, lived this beautiful, simple life, and people now are, me and Tristan just had a whole conversation about people now are starting to protest about the virus. They want to open the country up despite, you know, death starting to go up and stuff like that. Why are they doing that? Because they have Stockholm Syndrome. They are in love with the machine that abuses them. They're in love. They worship their abusers. And they can't handle that it's all going to, you know, it's all going down. But, man, this could be a really great awakening for a lot of people. A lot of people are stuck in their homes, you know, now facing with their families.
You know, man.
Go ahead.
You are not your job. You go get a hobby, go develop your religion, go learn something. You know, do something fun and for yourself. Take your own identity. Working is not an identity.
It's not an identity. You know, I've always been a work to live kind of guy. You know, I always, do I like making money? Hell yeah, I like making money. Do I like having cool stuff and doing cool things and making sure my family's fed and stuff? Of course I do. You crazy? You know, yeah, I love nice things and, you know, ornate things and nice clothes. And I like all that stuff, obviously. But my loyalty is with spending time with my family. My loyalty is doing this stuff with you guys. My loyalty is working with the Neurona Society. My loyalty is to the gods and the ancestors. And that's where my loyalty, that's where my heart is. And the hamster wheel is just a means to an end. It's not my identity. It never will be my identity. And this industrialized, capitalist, socialist, modernist, you know, the modern way of work being your identity, that's not a spiritual way to be. Should you fill your time with productivity? Absolutely. You should be a productive, industrious person. You shouldn't be, you know, sitting around getting drunk and being a loafer and being a big fatso. That's not good. You know, I mean, that's not good for you. But, you know, your identity is your family. Your identity is your community. Your identity.
Well, you know, I'll have to say, dude, if you're just going to a job and making widgets for your boss and you never see any of that shit, that's not being industrious. Like, it doesn't do anything for you or your family or your community. Do something for you. You know, go make a garden. Go spend some time with your kids or something.
Yeah. Grow a garden. Go hunting. Teach yourself a craft. Teach yourself something. Like, become something. Become who you are. Become you, not a worker bee. Become you, because what you are is something very special and very unique. You know, I did a voice message on Primordial Path, the Telegram channel, pretty recently, talking about the ontology and the what we are, between our soul complexes and all the physical aspects, all the physical and metaphysical elements that go into create you. But what you are is something that is unique in this point in time. And what you are is also the rebirth of your ancestors. You are your ancestors. That's who you are. So become that. Embrace that. Because what it is it's beautiful. And it can be beautiful. So that's it. So, all right, guys, stay safe, stay healthy. Many, many blessings, much love, many hails to each and every one of you. Hail the gods, hail the folk, hail victory. I'll see you guys next week, next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, here, Dave Martell Channel, The Bog. Ha ha.